Coming up, it's all politics from NPR News.
Support for NPR podcasts comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ken Rudin.
And I'm Linda Wertheimer, sitting in for Ron Elving.
I should tell you, Linda, that Ron actually would have liked to have been here, but he said he had something to do at a Minneapolis airport. So I don't really know. And Linda, actually, this is an opportunity for you because a lot of people who listen to NPR and the podcast really don't know much about you. And yet, despite this podcast, you've had a distinguished career.
I've had a long one, too. I've covered politics. I've covered so many conventions, so many candidates, back in the day when everybody used to get on the plane and not get off of it for months at a time.
And yet your career ends on this day. There's a sadness to it, in my personal feeling.
Certain symmetry, perhaps.
The big news this week is that it's finally official, and I can't even contain myself. Fred Thompson made it official.
The longest windup in the history of the world, and he finally is on.
That's one of the things I wanted to talk to you about.
All right. All right.
I'm running for president of the United States.
All right.
I tell you, I wet my feet pajamas last night. I was so excited watching that. But the question about Fred Thompson, is it too late? 4 months ago to Iowa.
I was just talking to a whole bunch of Republican Rotarians in Evansville, Indiana. And what they said was, look, late. What is late? This is the time. I mean, the election is so far ahead now that only because all these other candidates have been on our radar for so long do we think it's late. He has months. He has some time, and he doesn't have to overcome being unknown because, after all, we've all seen him on Law and Order, and that's the guy, as far as I can tell, who's running.
But a lot of people feel that he does have this star appeal. He does have that Reagan-esque quality to him. But at the same time, a lot of people have said that his speeches have been less than inspiring, that he's been less than specific on the stump. And on Leno, too, his solutions for immigration, the war, things like that have been pretty general. I mean, some people think that Fred Thompson's greatest day, best day, is the day before he gets in the presidential race.
That could be right. The thing that I think he seems to be relying on is his television career is not just that he played the role of the solid DA, and he played all those roles in the movies where he comes on his, what the hell is going on kind of movies. He's good at that, but, of course, he is an actor. But what I thought was interesting is on his website announcement, he goes through the plot. It's like it's sort of like you might sell a television show with this plot. Here's this guy. He comes up from nothing. He's eaten supper on the factory floor, working the graveyard shift. He has a great backstory. And I felt like this has been produced by somebody pretty talented. I guess the question is whether the big guy is up to it.
Well, that's the real, you mean God? No, that's the real question, I think. The fact is that Leno was scripted. His video on his webcast is scripted. But the debate on Wednesday night in New Hampshire was clearly unscripted. He wasn't there, but his absence was not unnoticed.
Well, Britt, I was scheduled to be on Jay Leno tonight, but I gave up my slot for somebody else because I'd rather be in New Hampshire with these fine people.
Well, I think that's a decision that Fred should make. Maybe we're up past his bedtime, but the point is, I think...
The only question I have for Senator Thompson is, why the hurry? Why not take some more time off? Maybe January, February might be a better time to make a final decision about getting in this race. But
I like Fred a lot. I think Fred is a really, really good man. I think he's done a pretty good job of playing my part on Law and Order.
Well, you've just heard Mike Huckabee, John McCain, Mitt Romney, and Rudy Giuliani on the fact that their would-be competitor, Fred Thompson, was not there at the debate. But of the folks who did show up at the debate, Linda, what did you think?
I thought that the one that didn't hit me the way that you would hope that he would because of where his ranking is in the standings was Romney. Romney just didn't sort of I don't think, maybe he had an off night. Maybe he was not as sort of emphatic, but the other guys really throwing themselves into it. You know, this is that sort of interesting moment in when you have a whole roster of candidates where we've already had Tommy Thompson drop out from Wisconsin. And I think the rest of them are beginning to feel like they're a little bit out of money and maybe a little bit out of time. So, you know, you're getting this last kind of Hail Mary quality to this debate. You see people really throwing themselves into it, saying things they think maybe controversial, even offensive. And then you get so that the guy who's kind of hanging back, the sort of hide and watch, I'm doing very well, so I'm just kind of like not going to get myself in trouble. The contrast is kind of, I think, noticeable. I think you'd even say that Giuliani, who is just a naturally lively person, he was not quite so hang back, but he was, you know, he was kind of watching it.
I thought there was an interesting difference. Giuliani, who leads in the national polls, and again, we've said this over and over again, it's hard to make a case how important national polls are 4 months before Iowa. But Mitt Romney does have a lead in Iowa. He does have certainly a strong lead in New Hampshire. And yet he didn't seem to be, I mean, he took on Giuliani on immigration, the sanctuary city he criticized him for. He has criticized John McCain in the past. But he didn't seem to have that connection, that rapport with the crowd, I thought, mm-hmm. that the other candidates certainly did. I thought Huckabee came off very well. I thought McCain came off very well, and Giuliani.
It seemed to me that McCain was kind of recovering some of his relationship with Republican audiences last night. I thought that he got a couple of good punches in, and of course it's unanswerable when John McCain says that people who have not been to war, to start talking about people who have not been to war, I've been to war, da, da, da. What are you going to say?
Speaking of war, I think the most emotional moment of the debate and one of the greatest moments of the debates of this year was the back and forth between Ron Paul, the congressman from Texas, who is clearly an anti-war candidate, and he's opposed to the war. He's one of six House Republicans who voted against the war in 2002, and Mike Huckabee, who may not be defending how the war is going, but certainly questioning whether we should pull out right away. And this is an exchange we heard.
Congressman, whether or not we should have gone to Iraq is a discussion that historians can have, but we're there. We bought it because we broke it. We've got a responsibility to the honor of this country and to the honor of every man and woman who has served in Iraq and ever served in our military to not leave them with anything less than the honor that they deserve.
Go ahead. You wanted to respond? He just addressed you. You go ahead and respond.
The American people didn't go in. A few people advising this administration, a small number of people called the neoconservatives, hijacked our foreign policy. They're responsible, not the American people. They're not responsible. We shouldn't punish them.
Congressman, we are one nation. We can't be divided. We have to be one nation under God. That means if we make a mistake, we make it as a single country, the United States of America,
no.
Not the divided states of America.
When we make a mistake, it is the obligation of the people through their representatives to correct the mistake, not to continue the mistake.
And that's what we do on the floor of the Senate?
No, we've dug a hole for ourselves and we've dug a hole for our party. We're losing elections and we're going down next year if we don't change it. And it has all to do with foreign policy, and we have to wake up to this fact.
Even if we lose elections, we should not lose our honor, and that is more important than the Republican Party.
We have lost over 5,000 Americans killed in Afghanistan. We've lost over 5,000 Americans over there in Afghanistan, in Iraq, and plus the civilians killed. How many more do you want to lose? How long are you going to be there? How long? What do we have to pay to save face? That's all we're doing is saving face. It's time we came home.
Gentlemen, thank you. Wendell.
You know, Linda, I don't know if that's Lincoln Douglas, but it certainly was an emotional moment and obviously talks about the issues that's dividing the Republican Party.
And it was interesting that the audience, you know, the audience was not booing Ron Paul by any stretch. And when he started talking about about how this is a hole that the Republican Party has dug for itself. That also I thought was interesting. I mean, a lot of very sort of high-minded talk from Mr. Huckabee about the honor of this country. It's hard to see. I felt the same way about all of the talk during the debate about surrender. One of the difficult things about Iraq is to whom would you surrender if you were going to surrender? I mean, it's the country is so divided against itself. Then that part of the, you know, part of the arguments that the Democrats are making is get out of the way of this civil war. But that was just a fascinating thing to hear the Republicans, to hear the division in the Republicans. It's Ron Paul versus all the other candidates, but clearly the people who were listening to it were much more divided than that.
Another thing that struck me is that both Mike Huckabee and Rudy Giuliani seemed very solicitous of John McCain, talking about him, that Rudy Giuliani said, you know, if I weren't running, I'd be backing McCain. Huckabee has commended McCain's honor and service to the country. And the question is, now, Linda, I know you've been on the Duncan Hunter bandwagon for a long time, and I understand that. But do you feel that there are two interpretations of it, that there was really a genuine appreciation of John McCain, or they feel that why not salute him because he's no longer a factor?
Well, and of course, then the other part of that is when you reach out to McCain, are you reaching out to all those people who admire John McCain and who might then come to admire you, possibly even to vote for you in a primary?
Especially in New Hampshire, where independents can vote and made a big difference in McCain's 2000 victory over George W. Bush.
Yeah, I think that it's both things. I think, you know, John McCain is a totally admirable person, it seems to me, and I think that that they're all, you know, when they speak out about how they feel about him, I'm sure that's genuine. But it's also true that John McCain does still have some voters. I mean, he has done something that the Republicans have said to me that what the mistake he made, they feel, was that he, you know, here he is, a theoretical fiscal conservative who could not who managed to blow millions of dollars in the first few months of his campaign. And, you know, how could you feel the same way about him after that? But on the war, on his service to the country, there would be nothing, you know, no way, as I said, to counter that.
One person who's not running for president, but one person who I think the Republicans wish were running far away, is Senator Larry Craig of Idaho.
Oh, yeah.
Last Saturday, a week ago, we thought that his career was over. He said it was his intention to resign, having been his arrest on disorderly conduct was revealed a week and a half ago. It seemed like forever, but by roll call, he admitted that he pleaded guilty, paid a fine, and is on supervised probation. But now he seems like there's some question about whether he's going to resign or not.
Yeah, the notion that it was his intention to resign, but that doesn't mean he's going to resign. The notion that if he could get that disorderly conduct guilty plea set aside, that, you know, everything would be changed. One of the things that I would worry about, if I were Senator Larry Craig, is that if he does try to keep his seat, where is he going to sit? I mean, who in the Senate is going to want
him? Well, he has a wide stance. We know that. But we do have tape of him, actually. This is just prior to his speech, his press conference last Saturday when he announced his intention to resign. This was a misdirected phone call intended for his attorney, Billy Martin.
Yes, Billy, this is Larry Craig calling. You can reach me on my cell. Arlen Specter is now willing to come out in my defense, arguing that it appears by all that he knows I've been railroaded and all of that. Having all of that, we've reshaped my statement a little bit to say it is my intent to resign on September 30.
Republican Party officials are not, especially in Washington, are not happy with any kind of ambivalence about a resignation.
No, and I think that the fact that they all jumped so fast, however kind of unattractive and ruthless it may have seemed at the time, you know, they're not going to go back on that. This guy is big trouble for the Republican Party. The Republican Party has had several of these instances happen, and if the guy who is, you know, sort of the blogger who puts himself in charge of outing Republicans has his way, there will be more. I mean, this is a very dangerous and ugly thing to have happen to the party, and it's already happened with you know, with Mr. Foley of Florida.
Mark Foley.
I just don't think they're gonna stand for it. And the question, of course, the question arises again. This man has carefully worded his statement. He's crafted his statement. The world thought he meant to resign. And to find out that before he actually made that statement, he made this telephone call, that, you know, that doesn't speak well for his character either.
Well, you know, when Mitch McConnell was asked about this, Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader, said he said, well, what about the possibility that Larry Craig may not resign on, as of September 30th after all, may even, well, he won't run for a term again, but maybe even serve out the rest of his term until 2009. And Mitch McConnell said, wait a second. As far as I'm concerned, this whole matter is over. And yet we have tape here from one of Larry Craig's supporters saying it may not be over.
Over? Did you say over? Nothing is over until we decide it is. Was it over when the Germans bombed Pearl Harbor? Hell no!
Okay, but for the Republican Party, really, this is over. I mean, they do not want to have Larry Craig be the center of their agenda in the waning days. Actually, whenever it's waning, I carry my umbrella. But in the waning days of... See, Ron Elving would never laugh at that, but Linda does. That's why Linda will be here next week. And in the waning days of the 110th Congress.
It is just an unbelievable situation to be in. And I heard Barney Frank talking for quite a long time about this on public radio in Boston. And he was basically, you know, he was saying this is hard, this is tough. But the
Barney
difficulty...
Frank, we should say, who had a similar instance where the press ran after him in 1989 when it was revealed that he had acquired the services of a prostitute.
And Barney Frank came out and has been reelected as a gay member of Congress, and his constituency seems to be okay with that. But the difficulty, of course, that Mr. Craig has is that he's been voting the other way and behaving one way and voting another. If what we think is true is true. I think talking about a politician as a hypocrite is always dangerous, because it's very difficult to avoid that in public life. But I think that Mr. Craig has crossed a line, and then when he said he didn't mean it, that he was going to quit, he crossed it again.
Although I wonder if it's hypocrisy as much as it is the inner torment. I mean, Larry Craig serving in Congress for 27 years, in service to Idaho for 27 years, even though the rumors about him have been there, it just seemed like in the blink of an eye, his 27-year career seemed to have just vanished like this. And it's probably amazing, startling for him to have to deal with.
I'm sure it is. I'm sure it is. And for the people of his home state as well. It's just but the Republican Party has just had this happen too many times. And they're just not going to put up with it. They're not going to let him back in this door.
Well, that's it for Larry Craig. And that's also it for this week's political podcast. Linda, right here.
Okay, I read this part. You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/politics.
I'm Ken Rudin.
And I'm Linda Wertheimer.
Ron Elving will be back next week. Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.